¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Recently, our company's softball team lost the big game by 1 run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, of course, 106.3, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can always get us on our phone or text line. We'll be checking in on that today. Our show is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York-certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at SpringHillAC.com. Willie Donick here with you. And Derek Mason in the house today, back in the saddle. Great to have him with us. I'm down in Atlanta. I am near SEC Media Days. I'm covering something else. My son's 16 and under perfect game final year tournament down here. So I'm buzzing all over the place here. But I will be with us for all of the show. And D-Mace will be alongside. D-Mace, what's going on?
Oh, nothing much. You know, same old, man. Just trying to figure the world of sports out. That's about it, man. You know?
Yeah. Now, traditionally, on this day of the summer, when the baseball all-star game is played, there's literally nothing else going on in sports. That's what it was when I was growing up. But now you got quite a bit going on. You've got a lot of the rookies reporting to NFL training camp, so they're starting to get acclimated. You've got, of course, SEC Media Days going on down here in Atlanta. You've got the all-star game tonight. You had the home run derby last night, so we got plenty to talk about today.
Yeah, that's a lot to talk about, Willie. That, you know, I am not the biggest baseball guy. I like it. I'm one of those guys that I'm sort of like, you know, the family that only goes to church on, you know, Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, Easter.
Right,
Christmas,
right. The big days.
Yeah,
the big one.
That's how I am with baseball. I'm only in it like during the playoffs, like the last stretch run, that last week into the playoffs. Because to me, that's when baseball, because you're down to the best of the best, and it typically, you know, gets fun right then and there. I told you guys yesterday, man. For one, it seemed like I would watch the home run derby, go outside, walk the dogs, let them out for about 15, 20, 30 minutes, come back in, and they haven't gotten past the guy that I left. It was just, it was like watching paint dry, Willie. I'm just being honest. Listen, they tried to hype it up so much. They really did, and I kudos to them that was covering the whole, you know, home run derby. But they tried their best, I mean their best, to really make this seem as if it was just the greatest thing on television. It probably was the greatest thing on television last night, other than the Derek Jeter, which
that
saved everything for me. That whole Derek Jeter, the captain, part one, that saved everything for me. But I told you guys, it's sort of like the dunk contest. They just need to get rid of it. For me now, there may be a lot of other people that think, you know, the home run derby is great. They need to keep it. But for me, and I'm pretty sure there are others that feel this way, they need to either revamp it or get rid of it, because it's truly not. It's too long and it's not exciting.
I am with you, and I am, you know me, I'm a hardcore baseball fan. I love the game. I have never been a huge fan of the home run derby. I'd be fine not watching it, honestly. I've gotten into it a little bit the last few years because my son and his team, that age, Mm-hmm. They seem to really like it. But I'm with you. I think you're hard-pressed to find anybody who can watch that thing from start to finish. I mean, it is. It's tedious. It's long. And it's so monotonous. I know they've tried in past years. They switched the format to try to make it quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Last night with Albert Pujols, that added a fun wrinkle, a 42-year-old trying to play with the young guys, and he advanced one of the rounds. But, you know, they had a playoff for one of them, so that adds a few minutes. It just drags. I'm sorry. I know that baseball – you got a lot of people, honestly, that like that more than they like the game, which doesn't say a lot about the game because that's another issue is because some of the pitchers are so dominant and they're coming in for one inning. It's awfully tough for the hitters to make it happen. So the game ends up being a strikeout fest, which, you know, very well could be the case again tonight. But we'll chat with Tyler Kepner from the New York Times here in the next segment. Tyler covered the Yankees beat for a long time when Derek Jeter was playing shortstop. So we'll get his thoughts on the documentary. I'm not sure how much of it he's seen at this point, but you and I both really enjoyed part one last night. Like you said, I was like, get this thing over with, you know, so we can start this documentary. And I watched the whole thing. It was really compelling. Watching Derek Jeter as a teenager in Kalamazoo, Michigan, certainly not a high school baseball hotbed, and the scouts honing in on him to be a high first-round pick, it just shows you the art of scouting. Because when you saw him, Derek, in that, in that sort of environment, real scrawny, you know, his swing didn't look classic like it did when he got to the big leagues. Just to have people envisioning him as a Major League Baseball star at that time, it's really hard to put that together when you see the film.
Yeah, it is. It's it chronicles, which I really enjoyed, because, you know, whether it was, you know, the whole Bulls, you know, that whole thing they did with the Bulls.
Right, The Last Dance.
Yeah, The Last Dance.
That did The Last Dance with Michael Jordan.
And they
did
kind
of set up with Jeter.
Which one did they do? They did another one, if I'm not mistaken. But it seemed like to me, it was almost like I could relate in a sense, you know, because he was from Michigan. Now, granted, we were from two different worlds in Michigan. Kalamazoo and Detroit are totally two different worlds. But it was the idea of him being from Michigan. Him, you know, in 94, I had just graduated high school and I was going to college. And I think 94 was his senior year, right? Was it his senior year in high school?
He was drafted his senior year in high school, which was 92.
92. So 94 was close when he was getting to the big leagues.
Right. He was in the minors at that point.
Exactly. So the way they chronicled it, you felt more attached to it. At least I did. And it all stemmed from him being from Michigan, you know, him being, you know, Kalamazoo. I just said it's two different worlds from Detroit, but it's still in the state of Michigan. And, you know, watching guys, you know, while we're running track, they're practicing baseball and it's cold. And those guys still got to go out there and they still got to play games in that frigid cold weather. And he even said it, like, listen, we get a knock up north because of the cold weather. We don't get an opportunity to play in warm weather all year round, like Cali, Texas,
Florida
in the south. And that was a knock on him because, you know, scouts were like, does he face 90-mile-per-hour fastballs basically all season? In all year, and he doesn't. So that was the thing they were trying to, you know, it was sort of a knock to him, but he overcame all that stuff. And, you know, he was like, I want to be the best player in the country. And he ended up being the best player in the best high school player in the country.
Yeah. It's a great story. It was a great part one. I think it's a 7-part documentary that they're going to be showing on ESPN. And I'll be honest, you know, as great a player as he was, I was a little surprised it was 7 parts. But after part one, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, you probably have 7 full parts here. Because I was thinking, maybe could you have done it in 5? Like, I hope it doesn't drag. at all, because I want to be locked in. But that was an interesting thing for me to watch, Derek, because I was playing college ball at that time. So I consider him sort of a contemporary. And I was in the minors, and the Blue Jays have the same area in the Tampa area down in Florida. The Blue Jays are in Dunedin right down the road. The Phillies are in Clearwater, which is right in that area, and the Yankees are in Tampa. So those three teams, and then you throw in the Cardinals back then were in St. Petersburg. Those four teams played each other all the time in spring training. I don't think I ever played a spring training game against Derek Jeter, but I wish I did so I could tell everybody, my grandkids, yeah, I played against him. I don't think it happened. If it did, I wasn't aware. But it's just interesting how he wasn't really – everybody was watching him the first year in the minor because he was a high first-round pick. He made 56 errors at shortstop his first year in pro ball. Isn't that something? 56.
He said,
but they stuck with
him. He said, you couldn't get 56 errors if you tried. I was like, man, he must have really stunk up the joint. Yeah.
It shows you how much failure is involved in baseball and how the best guys have to overcome the mental. Can you imagine the frustration?
Oh, my
I mean, just
goodness.
Think about if you're as a wide receiver, if you drop 56 passes or something.
Oh, you're cut.
The equivalent would be.
Yeah, the equivalent
right.
is the NFL, like 12 ball, like 12 passes you drop. Yeah.
Exactly. They don't have time to wait for you. But in the low minors, they do. So he was able to work through and develop. But a lot of people just they get so down. They lose their confidence. Mm-hmm. And that I think I've probably fell into that category. When I was struggling, I wasn't able to push through and get to the next level. I wasn't as talented as Derek Jeter, but that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And so the minors, you sort of weed out a lot of players, and he was able to break through. And he broke through pretty quick after that.
He
went from 56 errors to Yankee Stadium in about 2 years, which was pretty impressive.
I wonder what happened to the six guys that were drafted before.
Some of them made it. I looked at the list. Some of them made it to the majors.
Because I was when they were saying the names, I'm like, I don't recognize none of these guys in the majors.
Yeah. Well, the very first pick, Phil Nevin, is the manager of the Angels. Mm-hmm. Now, he was a tremendous college player. National champion, bounced around to a lot of teams, was never a star. Paul Shuey was a good reliever for a while. One guy was from Orlando, Chad Mottola. I don't think he ever made it to the majors at all. Can you imagine that?
Oh, man.
And there was a couple of – Jeffrey Hammonds was a really good player from Stanford. He played in the bigs for a while, but nobody close. Mm-hmm. Nobody close to Derek Jeter. So on that – D.D. Mace, let's take a quick break, and then we'll bring in Tyler Kepner, who covered Derek Jeter for a lot of those years for the New York Times. He's now their Major League Baseball writer. He's in L.A., and he will join us, and we'll talk about that home run derby. What do we think can be better? What came out of it last night? And we'll touch on tonight's All-Star game as well. Stay tuned. Just getting started here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And, yes, we've got all kinds of stuff from SEC Media Days today. We'll hear from Clark Lee. We'll hear from Nick Saban. The Crazy Pirate is today. We've got Tim Hasselbeck on the show to talk some NFL. We're going to do it all here on Darren, Donick, and Chase with D-Mace today on 102.5 The Game. Hey, we're back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, along with Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. As we promised you earlier, we're going to head out to L.A. It's bright and early out there, so we thank Tyler Kepner from the New York Times for joining us. Tyler is covering the All-Star festivities out there. He also was the beat writer for the New York Times covering the Yankees back in the heyday of Derek Jeter. Now, I understand he has not seen part one of the documentary yet, but certainly he's got some great insights on Derek Jeter. Tyler, thanks for joining us, and thanks for fitting us into the schedule today. I know it's pretty crazy. You're doing a lot of things around the All-Star coverage.
Yeah, no problem. They keep us pretty busy out here. We have the Futures game Saturday, and then the draft, and the Home Run Derby, and then today the game. So, it's a baseball blitz out here in L.A.
So, Tyler, first, you mentioned the draft. What did you think of Kumar Rocker and that story going third the other day?
Well, it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, the idea that he could be with his old teammate Jack Leiter in the same organization. I mean, that's really neat. And he improved his his cut by several million, I think, going from the 10th spot where the Mets took him to the third spot where where Texas took him. I know that's not how he wanted it to play out, but after a year in sort of purgatory, he's got a nice little bonus for it. So good for him.
Good for him, indeed. Great guy, for sure. Hopefully it works out for him and Jack Leiter. Tyler, let me ask you about the Home Run Derby last night, because I watched it a lot. My son's really into it. His teammates were out here for a travel ball tournament here, so they were buzzing about who was going to win. The Julio Rodriguez story was great last night. Albert Pujols showed up pretty well for age 42. That was kind of fun. But Derek and I both kind of have the same notion. I do think it drags on a little long. I'd love for them to cut off somewhere, 45 minutes or so, if they can. But just give me your thoughts, because you're there.
Yeah, I've seen a few iterations of it. I think the current rules are the best ones I've seen. I mean, they redid it around 15 or so, and it was in Cincinnati, and they had, I think it was Todd Frazier and Jock Peterson that year, and it's been pretty exciting ever since. I think it's a good event. I mean, obviously, I don't watch it on TV, but when you're there, it seems like the players really, really enjoy it and really get into it. And there's all, you'd always want. It's kind of like the dunk contest, right? You'd always want all the big guys to participate. Aaron Judge and Stanton and whatnot. But they won it when they were young players, and now they kind of cede the stage to current young players like Juan Soto, who won it, and Julio Rodriguez. And that's probably the way it's supposed to be. You have Pete Alonso, who loves it and is more enthusiastic about it than anybody I've ever seen, which is great. And he got knocked off last night by Rodriguez. So that was kind of fun, to see a fine, the last three guys standing, were Albert Pujols, who was sort of there ceremonially, but obviously has almost 700 homers, and that was cool. And he's almost as old as Julio Rodriguez and Juan Soto combined. So that was it was neat. It was fun.
For Soto winning it on the heels of the huge news that, of course, with Scott Boras, his agent, you can't be surprised, but I understand his position in where the Nationals are with the team being for sale, him wanting to kind of be honest with them. He didn't intend it for it to be public yet, but moving forward, what do you think is the next move? How busy will people be to try to make a move for him now, as opposed to say the off season or next year?
Well, it's interesting. I just wrote about that. It's just a matter of perception, right? I mean, from the Nationals, they can say, hey, look, we offered him the largest single contract in baseball history. What more can we do? And from Soto's standpoint, he could say, well, but it's nowhere close to the largest average annual value. And at his age, 23, and with his talent, he leads the majors in OPS the last 5 years, he could reasonably expect a higher average annual value. I mean, it's really crazy dollars, but when you're in that market and when you're such a commodity and you're as good as Soto is, that's the kind of consideration you have to take. So I understand him turning it down, even though I would eagerly take it. But I'm not Juan Soto, and there's only one Juan Soto, and he I don't know if he'd want to be tied to the Nationals really at this point, with the ownership changing soon and the way the team has fallen on hard times. But boy, will it be fascinating if they trade him, because his value with this year plus two more is just extraordinary. So that's going to be a really interesting subplot here until the trade deadline.
We'll talk with Kyler Kepner.
Baseball columnist,
New York Times. I'm sorry about that. My Zoom is, you got a little back here. I got to turn down the mute button. There we go. I'm sorry about that, Tyler.
You had to think and talk at the same time.
Exactly. Tyler, I know you didn't get a chance to see the first installment of The Captain with Derek Jeter, but you've covered that team while Derek Jeter was on it. What were some of your fondest memories of Derek Jeter and covering that team?
Wow. Well, yeah, I covered him for 8 years as a beat writer, and then beyond that as a columnist. And I've never met anybody in my life who's more self-assured and secure than Derek Jeter. He's the most he is the most comfortable with who he is, and self-confidence sort of person that I know. He knows, he understands the game, of course. He knows he's going to fail, but he never thinks he will. And he has an amazing ability to just, restart the next day, no matter what it is. And he's, I guess, extremely smart and very serious. And he plans out everything with precision and then follows it with real discipline. I mean, like, and just in the way he would deal with the writers, I mean, some people would sort of miss the point, and they would say, like, oh, he doesn't say anything interesting. It's like, well, he can say interesting things, but because he's very smart and has those insights. But what he does is he does it on his terms. He would always be available for us to talk to. And there is always real value in having the captain of the Yankees in your story and knowing you could get him. But he was never going to say anything that he didn't want to say. I interviewing Jeter over all those years, again, he was always around. But it was like he was taking at-bats, and if he didn't like a pitch, he would just foul it off. You know, if he didn't like a question, he would just foul it off. He would just answer it in his way and maybe not say anything of substance. But you know, if you asked him a direct question, you know, baseball-wise, he'd usually give you something interesting because he had such a good sense of what was going on. So it was very interesting to see somebody so so disciplined in how he dealt with fame, and that really, really, helped all of us, honestly, because we could always, like I said, we could always get the captain in our story, and he could always He would never let anybody say, oh, Jeter blew me off, or, you know, Jeter's a jerk, or Jeter wouldn't talk to me. We could never have that on him. So he always wanted to win every single interaction, whether it was on the field, in the clubhouse, everywhere. And he very often did.
Now, Tyler, do you think that that is what separated him from some of the other greats in other sports, that he was more accessible than they were? He was more willing to give you an honest answer and just sort of move on past it. He wasn't the guy that, you know, if things went bad, he kind of tried to skirt the questions or duck away. He stood in there and he answered the questions, and he gave you the answers that he felt was truthful.
He did. And because of that, because he would tell you, like I said, what he wanted to say, but by always being available and by always looking everybody in the eye when the session was winding down and saying, you got what you need? We good? He kind of blunted any or much of the criticism, because no one was left being resentful or disappointed or with him because he wouldn't talk to them. You know, no one was left saying, boy, I'm going to, even subconsciously going to give him more negative coverage because I'm upset he didn't talk to me. He was always there, and he was always polite. And so even if he didn't cause any controversy or say stuff that was going to make headlines, you could never be upset about it because he always answered your questions and was always really polite about it. So I think that contributed to a much easier way of navigating New York than it is for most people, because he came in as a winner. He won as a rookie and then won consistently. I mean, he won four championships his first 5 years. So he had that sort of championship glow. And then he got great press because, honestly, he deserved it because he treated everybody well. And he was a Hall of Fame player.
Tyler Kepner with us from the New York Times. So, Tyler, there are those that see everything that you're saying, that presence, handling the New York media, being the leader of a great team, and that made his value well beyond even what he did on the field. But then there's another group that just look at the numbers and say, well, he's overrated because of all that other stuff with New York. But so in your opinion, was he overrated as a player?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, there's only five people in the history of the world who had more hits than Derek Jeter. I mean, he's sixth all-time in hits. So I don't care if he got it for the Marlins or the Pirates or the Royals or the Yankees. If you're sixth all time in hits in the history of baseball, it's hard to be overrated. And beyond that, he did it at a position where, you know, even in the age of A-Rod and Tejada and Nomar and all those guys, it's still not the most offensive position. He did it at a premium defensive spot. Maybe his defense was a little overrated, but I don't know. The Yankees won all the time, so it wasn't like it hurt them that much. He made all the routine plays. He knew where to be. So I think he doesn't have anything to apologize for. I mean, even the advanced metrics, sometimes you'll get a little bit war, and it wins above replacement, and a guy will be much less than you thought. And I mean, I wonder why. Maybe he was overrated. Well, Jeter's war is really high. It's in line with all the Hall of Famers. So I've never really bought that argument, because all you got to do is look at the cumulative stats. And sure, he had more opportunities in October, but he was basically the same player in October over 158 postseason games as he was in any regular season. He was just remarkably consistent over time. And, sixth all-time in hits, I think that says it all.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. It's pretty interesting how that comes up from time to time. I'm sure that argument will be made again while this documentary is going. Tyler, I know you got to run. You got a lot going on today. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the All-Star game tonight. Great catching up with you. And, of course, good luck to your squad in our simulation league, which the playoffs get started tomorrow, which nobody cares about except for the two of us and about 12 other people.
Yeah, Andrew Marinus is a Nashville guy. He's a great author and I'm sure a friend of the program, but he's going down.
It's Tyler versus Andrew in round one of the playoffs. That is coming up as well. And I'm taking on Mark Bechtel from Sports Illustrated in the other playoffs. So that's in a whole nother world. Derek, you have no idea what we're talking about, but that's okay. Don't worry about it, because we'll just have to move on. Tyler, we'll talk to you again here very soon.
All right, thanks, fellas.
Yep.
All right, good stuff. Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. Great perspective there on Derek Jeter and the All-Star game, of course, coming up tonight in L.A. Stay tuned. We're coming back. We'll hear from Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. He just got done talking to the media down in Atlanta at SEC Media Day. Stay tuned. We're coming back, and let me start it by telling you about Loan Pronto. And, of course, they've got some great stuff going on over the summer. Your home's value is way up again. And so you have access to a lot of money. If you need it, you don't have to let it just sit there. You can use it. Loan Pronto can help you with it. It's the equity line of credit program. You don't have to refinance, but you can access a high percentage, up to 97% if you want, of your home's value. So you can get cash out now if you have big bills to pay. And listen, economically, there's inflation going on right now. So if you got credit card bills that are piling up, you can use that cash now. Pay off the credit card. Do a home improvement project if you want. Pay off the car loan, whatever you might need to do. Get a down payment on a new home. You can get $50,000, even $100,000 or more, and use that payments to your advantage. So don't let all that home equity pile up. Use Loan Pronto to turn your house into an ATM and get the cash you need. Loan Pronto, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780. Equal housing lender, NMLS, 166-1781, subject to lender approval. We're back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, along with D-Mace. It's Willie Donick, Derek Mason today, and we've got Chase will be back a little bit later in the week. Darren is on vacation this week. We've got all kinds of coverage from SEC Media Day coming your way here in just a moment. We're going to hear from Clark Lee, SEC Media coverage this week, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. But D-Mace, I want to hit you with one thing that I was interested in when you asked Tyler about Derek Jeter, just in a media buzzsaw in New York, right? The attitude, the ability to sort of steer clear of the controversy when needed, knowing that anytime you throw a little blood in the water, everybody's going nuts. How skillful do you think that is? And how many players maybe have you run across that you kind of wish had that ability? Sometimes maybe you don't intend to do that, because it certainly makes it fun for all of us in the media. If somebody said something, it goes viral right away. But Jeter seemed to be masterful at sort of avoiding that.
Well, I think guys, and listen, it when Jeter came out in 90, when he got drafted in 94, 92, I believe. Yeah, yep. Like you said, 92. And when he finally made it to the majors, I think around 94, 95, there wasn't, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there was this sort of like class or this attention to, you know, attention to detail in regards to how to answer questions from the media. But he was able, and if you kind of sort of watch all the great ones, whether it's Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and I'm talking about guys that were in the media, A-Rod,
Derek Jeter. I think P.K. Subban had that ability.
Yeah, P.K. Subban. Guys that had this.
Always accessible, but avoided the firestorm.
Exactly, because I think especially like Michael and Derek and Tiger, they had to, and granted, they had great PR people, I'm sure. And I'm sure they were taught, hey, listen, because this is what we were taught in 97, 98, 99 when I got drafted. It was, listen, when a question is asked of you, you are in control of that interview. You can answer the question when you feel like answering it. I think some guys, when they hear a question, they immediately answer it. They just go in without even truly thinking about what is being asked of them. When the question is being asked, instead of them listening, they are thinking about their response instead of listening to the question and then taking time to respond to it. I was taught through these seminars in the NFL. Listen.
So you had seminars.
Exactly. We had seminars. We had all this stuff. You know, listen. Answer.
Did you have it before you were drafted, or
before
after
and
drafted?
during? Okay. Yeah, listen. Answer the question slowly. You have time. That interviewer is not going anywhere. You know, they want you to answer the question quickly, because typically when you answer the question quickly, you're giving them exactly what they want, because you're answering the question out of emotion, and you didn't think about it. And guys like Jeter, Jordan, Woods, Bryant, and you can name a bunch of other guys.
Yeah,
great.
I think LeBron's got
LeBron. They always understood, we control this. We control this city,
Brady.
Not you, Brady. We control. Watch how long it takes those guys. If you sat down and truly watched an interview in person, they take their time with questions. They take their time in answering a question. Because in their mind, they've listened to what the interviewer has asked them, and then they're thinking of their answer, because they know they're in control of this. It's not the interviewer that's in control. It's me. I'm in control of this interview. And Derek Jeter was perfect at that. You know, he didn't give you anything. He didn't give you clickbait unless he wanted to, and he was strategic at it. Michael didn't give you clickbait unless he wanted to. Kobe didn't give it to you unless he wanted to. LeBron, Tiger, those guys don't give you clickbait unless they want you to have it, because they're so masterful at, listen, I control this, not you. You're just here to ask me the questions. I'm here to answer them, which means I'm in control of all of this. And Derek Jeter was great at it.
Yep, and he did it with kind of a smile on his face.
Absolutely.
And if you're always there, then you gain a lot of respect from the media, and they're not looking to go with the gotcha. They understand what you're doing a lot. So that is a really interesting skill of high superstar athletes that really is helpful for them. Now, we're going to come back and we'll hear from Clark Lee from SEC Media Day, certainly handling the media in his own way, being a second-year coach now, coming off of a winless season in the SEC. You've got this mountain of stuff going on in the league with NIL and all that stuff. He's trying to build a program from rock bottom here. And so we'll hear from him when we come back, and then D-Mace and I will interpret what he had to say to the media. That's coming up next here on 102.5 The Game, 106.3 The Game, Nashville. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Derek Mason is back at the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Willie Donick here with you from down in Atlanta near the SEC Media Days. Our coverage continues, and it is brought to you, of course, by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Here's Clark Lee, head football coach, Vanderbilt Commodores.
Anthony Patterson with the Atlanta Voice. Coach, of course, coming into this year, you talked about just expectations and things you learned prior to last season. What are some things that for yourself that you want to get better and hopefully rub off on your team as you get ready to start the season?
Thank you for the question. One of the things that becomes a reality when you're in this role is that your development begets team development. That, you know, the better I am in my job, the better that everyone else in the program can be in theirs. And whether that's anticipating problems, whether that's doing a better job of communicating effectively, I think specifically to address where I want to be better is a cohesive strategy for each game, where we're looking at the complementary aspects of playing winning football, and I'm doing everything I can to put the best competitive product on the field. You know, that is my responsibility, and our goal is to play and fight and win each game, and I need to be on top of it in terms of empowering all three phases to interlock and to become a force on Saturdays.
Coach, we're going to go over to our right and about the fourth row.
Good morning, Clark. Johnny Ballpark Franks with Franks Media in Nashville and Huntsville. Earlier you mentioned the changing landscape. With regards to name, image, and likeness, being in the city of Nashville, how has that impacted your program so far, and what do you see as far as the future of NIL being in Nashville?
Yeah, we have a great partnership with the city of Nashville. Obviously, we're right in the hub of a lot of activity, specifically with where our campus sits. And so we've definitely seen benefit in that. And I think, you know, as we continue to strengthen our team and strengthen our brand as Vanderbilt football in the city, we'll continue to reap the rewards of being in such a fruitful ground. But, you know, certainly we value our relationship with Nashville, and we think that in that NIL landscape, our location strengthens us.
Coach, we're going to go right in front of me about five rows back. Drew.
Yes, Coach Lee, Drew DeArmond, WZZN Radio, Huntsville, Alabama. You've got two stalwarts on your defensive line from my area. I was able to watch both those young men play in high school. Davian Davis, who came to SEC Media Days last year from James Clemens, and then Malik Langham from Lee High School. What are your expectations for both of those guys on your D-line and for your defense this year?
I'm so excited for those two guys. And Davian is recovering from injury, and he's fighting his way back. He's done a great job and being on top of his rehab. He's attacked that just like he attacks everything in life. So we'll be excited to get him back. He's a leader for us. He was a captain for us a year ago. He's part of the heartbeat of our program. And so we certainly value Davian both as a player and a person. Malik has made a ton of strides within the program. I thought last season, you know, he was injured and started slow. I thought he came on late. We're looking for him to capture that level of competitive spirit and effort he played with at the end of the season. He has the physical measurements to be a force in our league. And, you know, we're excited to watch him actualize that and have a lot of work to do ahead of us to get there. But both those guys are two of my favorites, and we're fortunate to have them as part of our program.
Okay, we're going to stay in the same section, even further back. Back behind.
Hey, Coach. Stuart Steele with the Marietta Daily Journal. Daniel Martin from Marietta High School is one of the members of your recruiting class this year. What have you seen from him in his first year with the program, and what does he bring to the team?
So Daniel was an early enrollee for us, and we you know, his skills are apparent. Like, we knew that in recruiting. You know, just like any freshman, he needs room to grow and develop, so we're going to give him that room. But we're excited to see him come back after a summer of training and obviously the experience through the spring where he got to know the structures of the defense and how we operate. That'll give him a great launching point heading into fall camp. And so he's athletic, he's long, he's got range. But just like any freshman, you know, we got to give them room to grow and develop into the players they're going to become. But we're certainly excited about Daniel.
Coach, we're going to go down here on our left side in the middle. I think we had a question right here.
Chrissy Freud, NBC Sports Edge. How have you watched Mike Wright and this quarterback room progress overall? And just generally speaking, how important do you think mobility is to quarterbacks in the modern era of football?
Well, I think it's all about moving the ball, right? So, you know, one way to do that is with a mobile quarterback, and Mike Wright happens to be one of the best in the country in that respect. You know, we want him to develop as a total quarterback, which he has, and he's demonstrated leadership abilities too. And so we're excited for him to enter the fall as our starting quarterback. He knows that he has to earn that every day. That's part of our covenant. So, and on top of that, we're fortunate to have, you know, a second quarterback with a ton of game experience and starting experience in Ken Seals. And, you know, I want to say this because I think it's important. You know, we had a challenging conversation at the end of spring to set a course through the summer. And our staff got together and said, hey, what is the best course forward here? What is the right thing to do to set a trajectory for our offense? And the end of that conversation was communicating that Mike was going to enter the fall as a starter. And obviously that conversation is easy with Mike and harder with Ken. And I want to just give credit to Ken Seals, because in an era right now where 9 out of 10 times, you know, that player that's getting the disappointing news makes the choice to move on, Ken Seals set his jaw and made a determination that he was going to earn it every day. And so what I've been proud of from the two of them, and one of the challenges that I issued to them both, was we have to cease to compete for that spot alone and start to compete for the personality and identity of our team, meaning their position as leaders in our program is more important. The team success is more important than that battle between individuals. And so we can be great competitors on the field, and I expect that. I expect ruthless competition for that job every single day, but we have to be collaborators off the field. And I've seen growth and maturity in both those guys in that respect. And that's going to go a long way to develop the other 10 positions on offense on the field, independent of who the signal caller is. But we're excited for that competition, that battle. We think Mike has a lot of skills that we want to use. Ken Seals has proven that he can do it as well. And we have young quarterbacks, too, that are anxious to take their swing. And in our program, competition is the ultimate motivator, and that we want that to be true of every position.
Coach,
that's Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you. And D-Mace, I thought that was really interesting. It seems like every day we're hearing a story from some school of so-and-so is the starting quarterback, and that means quarterback B, C, and D, they're all into the transfer portal and looking for somewhere else where they're concerned. So that was actually a pretty interesting story that Clark Lee told. He went in, if you followed Vanderbilt at all last year, Mike Wright and Ken Seals sort of battled for the position last year. Ken Seals being more of a pocket passer. Mike Wright is a really exciting runner. I mean, he's tremendous in the open field and hopefully is getting better as a passer. So Mike Wright has now sort of passed Ken Seals to the point where they wanted to give him the job. Ken Seals didn't say, I'm just going to pack up and find another place. I'm going to stick it out. So hopefully that makes the team stronger. But that was a pretty interesting story. You don't hear too many of those these days.
Yeah, you don't. It's typically, you know, you hear of two top-tier guys battling it out. And, you know, whoever doesn't win the job, they typically, after a while, move on. They don't move on right away because you never want to. I think these kids are a little bit more savvy now. You never want to, when you hear, I'm not the guy, just say, you know what, I'm leaving. No, you sort of let it play out throughout the season, and you kind of go, you know, you get better. But you, in your mind, you're thinking, okay, if I don't get a shot this year, and if this kid continues to progress, then I have to leave if I indeed want to be a player at that position. And more than likely, a lot of times, is at the quarterback position because only so many guys can play. Ken Seals decided to stay for now, and because he knows Mike is a young guy. He's a guy that's still developing, and anything can happen this season where, you know, Mike might get hurt or things might not be going as well as what coach thought it would. Well, Ken is sitting on the sideline just waiting for his opportunity. So I think he's decided to stay because he understands that it's not definite that the number one now will be the number one at the end of the season. Now, if it is that way at the end of the season and Mike Wright has exceeded all expectations, then as a player, you have to think, especially a young player that wants to play, you got to think, okay, is my opportunity better somewhere else? So it's good that Ken Seals didn't just say, you know what? He's not going to say, you know what? I'm leaving.
He stuck it out. Especially at a place that hasn't won much.
Absolutely.
Right? It would be so easy for anybody on that team to say, geez, I don't want to be around for this rebuild. It's going to take a while. We play in the SEC. We're going to get buried. I've heard it put this way. They could be a lot better this year and still end up 0-8 in the league. It's, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully they make a step forward. But that's the reality when you're in your second year and there's a constant turnover in rosters and they want to build for the long play. They're not looking for quick fixes, grabbing a ton of transfers. That's what Clark Lea has said from the start. So I don't know, Derek, have you ever played on a true rebuilding situation at any level? Because that's got to be really challenging. And you can hear it in Clark Lea's voice. He's all about process, trying to build that foundation that hopefully you can grow from, because they're not there yet. It's pretty obvious. And he's swimming with the sharks. So he's trying to figure out, how do I sell this thing to my own players? How do I get my guys better every day to take these steps forward?
Well, it helps when guys like Seal decides to stay.
Yeah, I agree.
So other guys are looking around and saying, okay, if he stayed, then I can stay at least another year and try to help in the process, or help, you know, advance this program. Because if Ken Seals leaves, then the other guys are thinking, man, he left, you know, I might as well leave too if that's the case, you know. But I truly believe he believes in the program enough that, not that they're going to win the SEC championship, but they're going to be much better than they were last year.
Yeah, and if they end up making strides in the next year or two, even if it doesn't amount to a bowl season, it'd be great if it does. But someday, if they do get to where they want to go in, say, year 3, 4, 5, there are going to be a lot of people that are thankful of this first group, right? I know Clark Lea will, of the guys who built, you know, that ground, that solid foundation when it would have been easy to walk, right? Because he took over at rock bottom. It has been really, really hard.
Well, it's always been hard at Vanderbilt, man. Come on now.
Well, yeah. You know what I mean? But they're not very far removed from James Franklin and winning 8-9 games in a year, winning some bowl games. Even Derek Mason's teams, they weren't great, but they went to a couple bowl games. You know, they had some good wins. They beat Tennessee 2 or 3 times, you know, when Derek Mason was there. But you're right. You know, any Vanderbilt fan will tell you they've watched some 2-10s. I've watched some 1-11s, you know, 1-10s back when they played 11 games. You know, there's a lot of double digit numbers on the right, single digit numbers, low numbers on the left. But when you've had some success, you know it can be achieved. But right now, in this league, if you're not bringing it, you can easily get buried. And so they've lost the momentum that they had when they were a bowl team, you know, when they had Keyshawn Vaughn and they had just enough to win the 6 games. So these are hard times and they're trying to get that groove back. So I'm really curious to watch this particular group, because it may not be about W's, but it's about building for the next group to win W's. They may not see the success, but they're going to be part of what happens down the road if it goes well. All right, when we come back, we got a special guest. The Grand Prix is coming up here in a few weeks. And you can already see it on the area around Shelby Park or Shelby Street, the Shelby Street Bridge. They're building the racetrack, and that means the IRL is coming here very soon. Stay tuned. We'll have more. Scott Dixon will join us next.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.